Let's look at some of the headlines in the newspapers. Adams was Army Council member, says IRA veteran. Adams sat with me on Army Council, says IRA man. And the other papers have similar revealing shocks that Gerry Adams was in the IRA. Let me speak to Malachy O'Doherty about this. Malachy, good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
Malachy, you've written widely about the IRA and about the troubles. And
yeah, I have a book about Gerry Adams published just a couple of years ago, yeah.
Yeah, and I've made my way through it, I have. And, you know, I don't think you'd be shocked to hear he was in the IRA.
Well, I'm not shocked to hear it said that he was in the IRA. We have to be alert to the fact that the man has turned litigious in his old age. But it is commonly said that he was in the IRA, and he's commonly denied that he was in the IRA. This is in contrast with several other members in the party who are candid about having been in the IRA, and like Carol McCullen, Gerry Kelly, Martine Anderson, Conor Murphy, Jennifer McCann, Bobby Storey, Alex Maskey, Pat Sheehan, Raymond McCartney. So they, are never asked outright, you know, well, was Gerry in the IRA, you know? And it might be very interesting to hear how they would respond, because I think they would usually respond with a deflection. They'll not address the question precisely. But, you never hear them say that he wasn't in the IRA, and that's an interesting point as well. The question of whether he was in the IRA, he was charged once in 1977, with membership of the IRA. When he was brought before the court, there was a very interesting legal device introduced by P.J. McGrory, his solicitor, where they asked the court to rule that there was no case to answer, in the sense to issue what was called a true bill, something like that. And the court determined that he didn't have to be charged until this consideration was made on whether it was a valid charge. And the court determined that it wasn't a valid charge, and therefore he didn't even have to refuse to recognise the court, because it was never actually put to him. But there was evidence prepared to be brought before the court at that occasion, including eyewitness accounts of him receiving a salute, the lowering of flags, at an Easter ceremony in Lancash during his period of committal there. We have the diaries of Ian Phoenix, published by his wife Susan and Jack Holland, you know, in which he lists members of the, by his assessment, or the special branch assessment of, because Ian Phoenix was a member of special branch, he died in the Mull of Kintyre crash. And so we have his assessment of the key figures that had to be watched out for, and one of them was Gerry Adams. I had a briefing by no less a person than the GOC, over lunch once at People Barracks, and we asked him, a group of journalists, we asked him who the members of the Army Council were, and he gave us the seven names of members of the Army Council, and they included, by his assessment, Gerry Adams and Martin McGuinness. So, it's been under discussion for a long time. You know, it's been said many times that he was a member of the IRA, and it's never been very plausibly denied either, I think.
Is it possible?
Ringing all around me, by the way.
Yeah, you're okay. Is it possible that Gerry Adams, who is obviously very close to the Republican movement during the darkest days of the Troubles, and was seen as a central guiding light for strategy and the political initiative and all of that, is it possible that he could have been involved in everything without actually having joined the IRA? Is there a process where you join, where you take an oath, where you sign? And he never actually did that. So technically, he's never been in the IRA.
Well, he was a member of the movement at the time of Billy McMillan, and before the split, he was a member of the organisation when it was the official Republican movement. He was in the movement, put it that way, and that was at a time when new recruits to the IRA were being green booked, as they call it, in the Ardskull in Divis Street. There was a room there where they used to bring them in and put the flag on the table and get them to swear committal. I mean, unless somebody who was there would say, you know, that he was, then how would you know? But certainly, for instance, his sister, Margaret, was, his sister's husband, McGee McCarty, was. you know, we know the names of most of the people who were in the IRA at that time, like Joe McCann and Des Sullivan and Billy McKee and various others that I won't air on air. But, you know, Adams was acquainted with all those people. When the split came in 1970, he was more affiliated, if you like. He went with the Provisional Movement. We'll still call it the Movement rather than the IRA, since that's where we're in dangerous ground legally. But, you know, he was used by Billy McKee, who was the OC of the Provisional IRA, the commanding officer in Belfast of the Provisional IRA. He was used with him to negotiate truces with the official IRA during feuds in the early 70s as well. And when he came out of prison in 77, one of the first things that he did was to settle a feud between the officials and the provisionals. So to have that amazing influence within the Republican movement, that he could negotiate on behalf of the IRA at Clonard Monastery with the leadership of the official IRA to settle feuds, you know, is quite amazing. And I mean, and I understand, in fact, that the person that he was negotiating with in 77 to settle the feud was his own brother-in-law. You're hearing phones ringing all around me, aren't you, Frank?
You're okay. It's an incredible story when you listen to how you describe it, and obviously having read your book, Malachy, it's something I would advise people to have a skim, through. Watching Spotlight tonight, of course, will be must-see television, as it was last week. Des Long seems to be a major contributor to the Spotlight investigation, or the Spotlight series, and he is the person who will be saying that Gerry Adams was in the IRA. He was on this program. He was on the Spotlight program last week, and he was a member himself. Alison Morris, how reliable a source is Des Long on this, considering that he is no real friend of Gerry Adams?
So I think Malachy was with me when we went to the screening of the first series of the Spotlight, and that was one of the questions that was asked. And the BBC at that time, the journalist said that they're not saying that this is the history of the Troubles. It is a history of the Troubles, and history is subjective and people's views are subjective. And so what you must look, when you see Des Long, and anyone who watched it last week and watched it this week will see that Des Long is a very unrepentant and very open about his past. He's quite jovial actually and laughs throughout it, you know. But what you have to remember is Des Long is part of that faction that split from the Provisional Movement in 1986. He went on to become a senior figure in Republican Sinn Féin. So, no, he isn't a friend of Gerry Adams. And also, nobody from mainstream Sinn Féin took part in this documentary. They actually have said that they refused to take part. So when we're looking back at history and as journalists, when we're trying to cover legacy, you have to remember that everyone you speak to, they might be telling you their truth. And I always say that. It's not that someone's telling you lies. They're telling you their truth. But their truth over time becomes blurred, or it becomes changed, or a narrative that is set out in public becomes fact when it may not be so, and that becomes blurred. And we can see the problems that coroners face when they're doing historic inquests and all sorts of other things, because people's truth does become, it becomes changed and it becomes blurred, and it becomes in some ways almost subject to folklore over time. So Des Long, you know, anyone watching it will make up their own mind whether he's telling the truth or not. In regards to Gerry Adams, we are still in a place where we don't have a settlement to our peace process in relation to legacy. We don't know what that's going to be. We have a series of proposals, but we have no government to push them forward. And so at this point in time, anyone who is or admits to being involved in any kind of illegal activity, it doesn't matter how far back you go, you can go right back to 1969, 1970, you're still subject to prosecution. And that remains the case. And I don't know that if we do get a settlement to our legacy process, if there is a point in time where there is some sort of amnesty or line in the sand, I think that there are many people who might come forward and tell very different versions of the history than the one that they're telling now. But I mean, I still have to do, as a security correspondent, I deal with people who are either past or in some cases present paramilitary figures, and there's none of them are going to say on the record what they're involved in, because they would be subject to prosecution in relation to that. That doesn't mean that the Spotlight and what it is not worth pursuing. So this story is something I know that the crew has taken over 3 years to make. It has cost an astronomical amount of money in terms of budget. But I think that in the absence of a legacy process, an official legacy process, it does fall to journalists in the media and the state broadcaster to a degree to tell those stories and to allow people to have that voice and put something that maybe future generations can go back and look at that is documented on the record, because those stories are being lost and people's memories are fading or they're dying. And so the programme's fascinating. I know you probably watched the first one. I watched the second one yesterday. It's not quite as explosive in that, you know, that we've seen now some of that archive footage in this. It supposedly is a bit of a shock the second time around. But as this goes on, I think, and as the time moves on, because well, it's not completely chronological, where they're currently around the mid-70s in the second one, and then it'll move on to the 80s. And I think that what I found more interesting about this programme was not Gerry Adams, because we've all heard that before. It's like a once-a-year story. It was the many times that there were opportunities to bring peace that failed. So what you'll see in the second one is Darren McIntyre goes and speaks to people who were involved in all sorts of secret talks, negotiations, to try and bring about a settlement and to try and end the violence. And they came so close on so many occasions. And then for various reasons, it fell away, whether that be Sunningdale, whether that be talks that were taking place between the British government and the IRA. They all failed at some point. And you wonder if you could go back, if one of those processes, just one of them, had of work to look how many people would still be alive or would have survived and how many people would not be traumatised today.
Alison, thank you very much indeed. Looking forward to seeing the second episode of it tonight. And I think it's important to wait until we see it all that's in the series before we pass judgment on this, as you say, a highly expensive spotlight series, but certainly well worth watching.